Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to Superbook Sports. Live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios today, Hawkins Field. The Vandy boys get set to battle in 3 hours, opening up the NCAA tournament. Coach Clark Lee, the football coach. You heard Ian talking about the SEC schedule in the update. Clark Lee will be by with us, the Vandy football coach, in 1 hour. So this morning I went on Robbie and Rex Road. And Joe, I forget what entrapment-like question Joe asked me that led to this John Hines and Andrew Burnett argument. But for some reason, after I got off the show, it turned into a total Looney Tune conversation about the Preds' former coach and the Preds' current coach. And just for reference sake, I gave Burnett, who I believe in, I'm sold on Andrew Burnett, I gave him a 7, and I gave John Hines a 2. And this is what happened on Robbie and Rex Road this morning.
So the question was the same scenario.
The question is this. The next 5 years play out however they play out. Yep. Either Barry Trotz is an awesome GM, terrible GM, somewhere in between. But John Hines is coaching that team for 5 years. Andrew Burnett is coaching that same team for 5 years. Confidence level, scale of 1 to 10 in each guy. I'm going to ask both of you this question.
I mean, my answer in Burnett is probably a 5 because I don't really know. I would put Hines at a 4. That's about where I'm at. I mean, look, I think Andrew Burnett has a chance to be a good coach, but I don't know that. I mean, the 1 year he had in Florida was very impressive, so I like that. The power play work that he did and the path that he's taken to get here, I like. So I like a lot about Andrew Burnett. I have no idea how good of a head coach he really is. So I'd go 5 with Burnett. I'd go 4 with Hines.
Michelle?
So I'm going to actually put them both at a 5 because I think that, first off, we've seen what John Hines has done with an okay roster. I mean, I wouldn't say that the teams he's had here are, incredible, but I also think he coached this team. There were some years where, they could have been better. They could have been better at the beginning of this year, but I don't think what this team accomplished was, I don't think they could have accomplished so much more than what they did. And then on the Andrew Burnett side of things, yes, he took over in Florida, but I would say that roster was, they won the President's Trophy. The sample size is still just too small. He's had great teams there and also in New Jersey. So what does it look like when it's all you, you're starting from the beginning, you have a roster like this? So honestly, I'm going to give them both 5s.
Both 5s? Now here's what I take umbrage with when it comes to Andrew Burnett and the lack of respect that I feel like he's getting. In both Robbie's explanation and Michelle's explanation, they act like winning the President's Trophy doesn't matter. It's like that one season that he got a trial to be the head coach of the Florida Panthers and took a franchise that hasn't won jack since 1996 and won the President's Trophy and lost in the second round of the playoffs doesn't count. That team had 108 points. This year's Florida Panther team, and I know they're in the Stanley Cup final, this year's Florida Panther team had as many points as the Predators have this season. So in the middle of the year, in October, the Florida Panthers have a team that they think's going to be pretty good because they were pretty good in 21. And in the middle of the year, it comes out that Joel Quenneville knew about a sexual assault inside of the Chicago Blackhawks, and he gets fired. And Andrew Burnett gets promoted to interim head coach, and he goes out and has a 108-point season, wins the President's Trophy, and wins 51 games. And it doesn't count because it's a small sample size? I mean, outside of Barry Switzer winning the Super Bowl in 1995 with the Cowboys, I can't think of a one-year sample size where the coach had nothing to do with it. You know what? I can come up with one. Bill Callahan, who coached the Raiders the year after John Gruden left, and John Gruden went to Tampa Bay and won the Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's players, and Bill Callahan got the Raiders to the Super Bowl, and they lost, and Bill Callahan was terrible, and he got fired, and Bill Callahan went to college, and he was terrible, and he got fired. That's the one instance where I look at it and say, hey, it was just one season. But right now, we don't have season two, three, four on Andrew Burnett. When you tell me a guy's a five, to me, that's neutral. Again, if you tell me a guy's a four, if you tell me he's a three, if you tell me he's a two or a one, you're telling me that he's a below-average coach. If you're telling me that he's a seven, you're saying that he's an above-average coach. And I think he's an above-average coach. I think a new guy that just gets hired like that, I think he probably starts at five. If he was a new guy that didn't have a President's Trophy or a number two in the Coach of the Year voting under his belt. But this guy does. And so that's my question when it comes to what I think is some very tepid, I don't want to say optimism, because again, they've got him at a five, some very tepid expectations for Andrew Burnett is, does the really, really good season he had as a coach count for nothing? Like, what you're telling me is that doesn't count because it was Joel Quenneville's players? I mean, Andrew Burnett was a part of that. Andrew Burnett got to Florida with Joel Quenneville, and they were awful, and they had a steady climb and became a good team, and Quenneville got fired, and Burnett won the President's Trophy. And he gets no credit for that. Does he get no credit because he wasn't the head coach for the whole season? Only 90% of it? Does he not get any credit for it because they decided not to keep him at the end of the year? Does he not get credit because it was only 1 year? Like, why does he not get credit for that? I mean, everybody tells me that John Hines was a great coach. And everybody tells me, they tell me that he should be the Rangers coach. And he's had 8 years. And he's never won anything, and he's never won a President's Trophy, and he's won as many playoff games over 8 seasons as Andrew Burnett won in 1 season, and everybody tells me that I have to respect Hines and say that he's a great coach and that things just didn't shake out here. But I'm not allowed to give Andrew Burnett credit for the success that he did have. I don't think that's very fair. I think it's disrespectful. I mean, the guy has already had a trial run. I mean, that would be like saying, well, you know, Lyndon Johnson's success of the Civil Rights Act doesn't count because he was the vice president who had been promoted up to president after John F. Kennedy got assassinated, and that was Kennedy's legislation that Kennedy wanted to push through, and LBJ pushed it through instead. No, Lyndon Johnson gets credit for that now. And Andrew Burnett gets credit for winning a President's Trophy. 108 points as coach. And I believe they finished with more points than that, right? Because this was only out of 75 games. And so they played 82 last year. I mean, 81. And so he had 108, and Quenneville, I think, had like 14, right?
I think they were 7-0 to begin the season, yeah.
Okay, so Quenneville has 14, he has 108. John Hines, in his career, who, again, everybody tells me I have to say he's a good coach, 84, 70, 97, 72, 22, and fired, 33, in part of a season, 64, 97, 92. In part of 9 seasons, John Hines has never sniffed 108 points. He has never sniffed the President's Trophy. And yet Michelle wants to give them both fives and says that, I mean, she's basically saying it's a lateral move. That if the question is same roster next 5 years, what do you expect? I expect a five out of him, and I expect a five out of him. I think you're totally discrediting what Andrew Burnett did. And I'm not saying that he's going to the Hall of Fame because in 1 year as an interim coach, they won the President's Trophy. And I'm not saying that I am going to rest my laurels on hoping that Andrew Burnett can win a President's Trophy when I care more about the playoffs than I do the regular season. But I'm also not going to take away from the man what he accomplished. He did that. And you have to give him credit. And for some reason, when I hear the, well, I'll give him a five because I don't know, I feel like that is not giving him any credit whatsoever. I think it's crazy. 615-737-1025. Phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. And a texter says, Ime Udoka had one good year, got fired, and immediately got another job. And we do not take away Ime Udoka's success from him and say, oh, well, it was Brown and Tatum. We don't do that. But our morning show was doing that to Andrew Burnett. I don't think it's fair. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your phone, Stillman and Company, 1025-1063, The Game. Ian, am I supposed to tell the fine folks about something right now? Stillman and Company, 1025-1063, The Game.
I've challenged our amateur scouts to get four top players for this franchise in the next two drafts. And we've got seven picks in the top 83. We got a lot of picks for next year. We're probably going to push some of our picks the following year and continue this process and fill our bin full with high-end prospects. And, you know, we traded a good player in Ecky to get, you know, the Schaefer kid, who is a different type of player, who's mm-hmm. more physical, he's big, good set of hands on him, all that. So he's different from Kemmel, and he's different from, you know, Luke here or Tomer, those type of guys. So, you know, we'll just have to look at it. But we're trying to get that top centerman. That's been, we've been 25 years trying to do that.
There you go. That was Barry Trotz talking about, hey, you know, this is our plan. And I am the kind of guy who, if you have a good plan, I'm here for it. Now, I understand that good plans sometimes don't work out. But if you've got a well-drawn-out, well-thought-out plan, and it makes sense to me, then my gut is that 70% of the time you're going to be right. 80% of the time you're going to be right. If your process is correct, more times than not, you will be right. Now, a broken clock is also right twice a day. So I also know that dumb people sometimes make good picks, or dumb coaches sometimes make, have good play calls and things like that. But I have heard Barry Trotz's plan, and I believe that Barry Trotz has a plan that makes a lot of sense to me and where the Predators have to go. The Predators are never going to be bad enough to get a great player. It's just never going to happen. Like with this coach and with these players and this goalie and the goalie that's in Milwaukee, they're never going to be bad enough in order to get a Connor Bedard. It's just, it's unfortunate that they couldn't have been bad this year when they should have been, but they're never going to be that bad. And Barry told you exactly what they're going to try to do. And he brought it up. What was it, 8 picks in the top 72 that he said? Is that the stat that he quoted right there, Ian?
Was it 8? I think it was 8 and 73. I know it was the first 73 picks. I want to say he said 7 or 8 picks in the first 83, 73.
Can we get that cut again?
Sure.
Because I want to say 8 and 72, but I could
be wrong. Amateur scouts to get four top players for this franchise in the next two drafts. And we've got 7 picks. The top 83, we got a lot of picks.
7 and 83.
7 and 83, okay.
So, all right, here's what he's doing. He is telling them, I want you to go get elite traits. You're not going to get the exact, you know, the combination of size, skill, elite traits, productivity, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to get that picking 19th. But you can probably find a guy with the 15th pick or with the 28th pick or with the 42nd pick or whatever it is. You can probably find a guy who has an elite shot, but he lacks in something else. Is an elite skater, but lacks in something else. And what he wants is he wants those elite traits. And then he's going to turn those elite traits over to his offensive coach and their development program. And they're going to say, okay, you've got this elite skill. Now we're going to get you better in all the other things, and then we're going to maximize that elite skill. And he's telling the guys, I don't want steady. He does not want you. He's not going to draft low-risk guys. Think about Anthony Richardson. That's what he's telling his scouts to get him. Get me the guy who has a little bit of a question mark, and he might not pan out, but if we take enough of these elite traits, one or two of these cats is going to pop. That's what he's doing. And considering the coach that he's hired, an elite offensive coach, I think it's brilliant. And there's one player that comes to my mind when I think about this approach, and it's Eli Tolvanen. Eli Tolvanen is not big. Eli Tolvanen is not strong. Eli Tolvanen is not a very impressive skater. He's not good in his own end. But he's got a wicked one-timer. He's got an incredible shot. He has got a lightning-quick release that you cannot teach. That's what Barry Trotz wants. What he wants is he wants his guys to draft that shot. Then he's going to get that shot in the system, and he's going to have his high-end offensive coach, A, figure out how to use that shot, but B, have him develop in the minor leagues to learn the other things around his game so that when he gets to the NHL level, that it's not just that shot and nothing else. And that's the plan. All the middle-of-the-pack guys, he's already got those. He's got Trennan, and he's got Sissons, and he's got, you know, Tyson Berry and Dante Fabro. He's got those guys that can all be third pair, bottom six. He's got all of that. What he wants, four top four players in the next two drafts, because he's got Forsberg, and I think he believes out of this group, Novak, Parsonen, Kemmel, Tomasino, all of those guys, that he's probably got two other guys. So I've got Forsberg, and I've got two or three other guys. So now get me two more top six guys, and I'm there. That's what he's looking for. And then he's going to have the offensive coach develop them. And so as long as the plan makes sense, I'm for it. What I'm not for is Jeremy Lauzon for a second-round pick because, well, you know, we think we can coach him to be better when he's never been better. That doesn't make any sense. This, I think, is brilliant. Forsberg is going to be in the top six long-term. I think we all know that. Cody Glass, who I'm not a huge fan of, but they are. Cody Glass is probably, they plan on him being in the top six for a long time to come. I assume they view Cody Glass as a second-line center. So that's two out of six. What did Barry Trotz ask his scouts to find him? Four top four guys. Add in Kemmel or Tomasino or Evangelista or Parsonen. You know, again, not all of those guys are going to hit, but one of five, two of ten are probably going to hit. And then, with those seven picks, find me two other guys. And then once you get me the elite shot or the great skater or the great puck handler, once you get me that, then I'm going to put them with my offensive guru expert coach, and we're going to develop the skills. I think it's a brilliant plan. I truly love everything the Predators are doing right now. Since the day Barry Trotz showed up, I have liked everything that this team has done. I think it's brilliant. I think Barry's doing a fabulous job, and I agree with the plan. Texter into the text line says, hey, Jared, I'm curious, what was the reason Florida did not keep Andrew Burnett after he had such a great season? Now, I read up on this. Apparently, they really, really liked Paul Maurice, and they offered Andrew Burnett a quote-unquote very prominent position inside of the organization, and he didn't take it and decided to go to New Jersey, where, by the way, they had their first success in years and years and years. but I can't tell you exactly what the Florida Panthers did or didn't do. It's funny because, again, I'm not the kind of guy to say, well, you know, if the Boston Bruins had held on to their 3-1 lead in the first round of the playoffs, everybody would be crushing the Panthers for having gotten rid of Burnett, because that didn't happen. The Florida Panthers are in the Cup final, so it looks like a smart move. But I do remember us talking about the Raiders and the Panthers and looking at two teams that had an interim coach that had success with the interim coach that felt like they could do better, and they turned around and they fired the interim coach. The Raiders did with Rich Bisaccia, and they hired Josh McDaniels, and the Panthers obviously did with Andrew Burnett, and they hired Paul Maurice. And at the time that we were having that discussion, both teams looked foolish for having decided to do that. And had they not done this, I mean, I think Burnett, I think that everybody would say, you're stupid for having fired him. But it has worked out. And again, we can't make things up that didn't happen. That is, in fact, the truth. Justin says, Jared, I want Hines to go to the Rangers even more. I want a bigger sample of what he won't do with a better team. He did nothing here, and Burnett did more with less. Well, I don't think he did more with less. I want to see what the kind of coach can do with the current Preds roster, with what tweaks that are going to come in the offseason, and hopefully a season that wows us all. Boy, that would be something. Elliot says that apparently Barry's plan is like the plot of D2, The Mighty Ducks. I've never seen D2, The Mighty Ducks. Is that good?
Well, let's take your word. I can't remember the plot for the second one as much as the first one.
I'll have to take your word for it. DeAndre Hopkins, the latest report from Diana, and Trevor Maddich tells us, why would the Titans not do this? We'll get into it with Trevor coming up next. 615-737-1025. Fireball Hot Take Friday, live from the Hawk at Vanderbilt. 1025, 1063 The Game.
So DeAndre Hopkins wants to get paid the type of money that we saw Odell Beckham Jr. get paid. Not that same exact amount, but money's definitely part of this. And financially, we are looking at all the teams around the league that are interested in DeAndre Hopkins. It's got to work financially for them. So you look at teams like the Chiefs, the Bills. You heard me talk about them being a good fit for them. Do they have the money? And would Hopkins be willing to maybe take less to play with a quarterback like Josh Allen or, let's say, Patrick Mahomes? And it's really going to come down to what he prefers and what he wants, as there are several teams, including the New England Patriots, who are interested in DeAndre Hopkins. And we're going to see over the next few weeks Hopkins taking visits with different teams, Brian, and he's going to make a decision on what's best for him.
Diana says that DeAndre Hopkins and the Patriots might have some interest, but Diana didn't say the Titans. And if Diana doesn't say the Titans, it makes me nervous that DeAndre Hopkins is not going to be a Titan. And I don't think the Titans are going to sign DeAndre Hopkins, but I don't think anybody's really all that interested in DeAndre Hopkins. And the Titans don't have a second receiver. Trevor Maddich joins us now in the program, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, I don't know for a fact that the Titans aren't interested in DeAndre Hopkins, but I think that the Titans aren't interested in DeAndre Hopkins, and I think they're crazy to not be interested in DeAndre Hopkins. And I know he's not the same DeAndre, but they don't have a second wide receiver. What do you make of it?
Well, it depends on two things. One, it depends on how good of a teammate they think he will be. And the other is, it depends on how long of a time frame they expect him to contribute. Might be, because when you look at the big picture of the Titans, they're going to have to compete to get to the Super Bowl with the passing attacks and the quarterbacks at Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes and Joe Burrow at Cincinnati and Josh Allen at the Bills and all these Justin Herbert with the Chargers, all these terrific young or in their prime quarterbacks and passing attacks. And right now the Titans are so far away from competing at that level with their passing attack. It's silly to even think about adding a receiver and then getting up to that level. They're going to have to compete against those teams to get to a Super Bowl with a completely different style and force those teams to play their style. And we've seen them do it in the past with an outstanding defensive front and with Derrick Henry. And so, you know, if they're planning on this being a long-term thing, then I don't think that spending a lot of money on on Hopkins would be the best use of the salary cap, because they're going to need a whole lot more than Hopkins in order to start to compete at the receiver level, certainly. If it's a short-term thing, it's a different question, as long as they can afford the guy. Because then it comes down to what they think he can be as a teammate and as a mentor. And I've heard on your show over the last few days, Jared, a really smart turn of the conversation from what could he provide on the field himself in terms of production to what could he also provide as a mentor to those young receivers. And I think that's one thing that, whether it's Hopkins or whether it's another veteran that gets cut by somebody else, that the Titans will be thinking about bringing in for that reason. Because you can't just have all of the knowledge coming from the coach down into the young players. You've got to have veteran players to teach them how to play and to teach them how to be. When it comes to playing, I mean, Hopkins has the perfect style, because he's not a guy that wins with elite physical traits. He's a guy that wins with elite technique with his routes and in great hands. So he can teach these young receivers how you don't just run up 14 yards and then cut back for a 12-yard out. You run up until this defender that's covering you, that you've seen on tape, will move his hips just very slightly like this. Then you make a slight move to the inside, which will set that hook on that defender, and then you come out. And it's guys that have been in the league for a long time that can help young guys to learn how to do that. And then there's the concept of how to be. And I'll stop here, Jared, so you can jump in. But at some point, whether it's today or another day, I mean, I needed someone my rookie year in the NFL to teach me how to be a pro in the NFL. And I didn't have one. And it hurt me a lot. And I had to learn it on my own. And eventually I became that guy down the road. But that rookie year, I needed that guy. And I will tell you that none of these young players in this wide receiver room for the Titans know how to be a pro yet. They just don't.
Trevor, do you think he's still got something left in the tank?
You know, I think he does, because he's not dependent upon his physical superiority. You know, I think he still can be smart with his routes. He can still uncover with technique and with understanding of what the defense is trying to do to him. So I think he can help. Do I think he can still be a guy that'll be a number one receiver? I wouldn't count on that. Which is why I would not pay him a ton of money. I would not pay him what he's asking. And I think it's really interesting what the Chiefs are doing. I mean, what I've read is that they've offered him, what, a $3 million contract for a chance to come and win a Super Bowl. We'll find out a lot about what his priorities are with what he might do with that. But from a Titans standpoint, I mean, to pay him, what, $10 million, $12 million in that range, if that is something that they may have to do, I don't think that he is able to be just on his own that productive player to justify that cap number on a team that still has huge holes on the offensive line to fill.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Maddux is with us on the program. Trevor, Will Levis apparently had a bad day at OTAs, almost wanted to throw his helmet apparently, but he decided not to, which was probably a good call. And TD said that he felt like Will Levis lacked accuracy. You know, look, it's OTAs. It's a passing camp. I don't know how much to make of it. What do you make of it?
Yeah, the physical side of it, I don't make a lot, because he's out there getting started. He's probably nervous as all get out, trying to show everybody the best he can. He's got the cameras all pointing at him, you know, when the media is allowed. And he knows that at the end of practice, the media is going to be all over him with questions. I mean, he understands those things, and I get that. So, you know, physically early on right now, not being where he needs to be, I'm not worried about it. The thing he's got to worry about is making sure that he doesn't demonstrate to his teammates and his coaches that he's a hothead who can lose control. Now, he didn't throw that helmet. That's good. I wasn't there. I didn't see exactly what he did. It's okay to get mad and to express that frustration, but then you had better take a breath, calm down, focus in, and the next play, do it right. That's the key. The play that he got frustrated and almost threw his helmet, all right, okay, I've been frustrated too. What he needs to show is that the next play, he focuses in and does it right. So what does that mean? You know, when they drafted him, you and I had a long conversation about one of the things he needs to do is just slow down. You know, he's too big and powerful and mighty in the weight room. It's too much for what his body needs to be able to do as a quarterback in the NFL. He needs more whip strength and less weight room strength because that binds up his shoulders and that hurts his accuracy. You know, his footwork, he needs just to slow down and do things right. Just take a breath, take an extra beat, and don't hurry up. His last year at Kentucky, he had a bad offensive line and not a good receiver room, and he felt like he was going to be under pressure and had to throw the ball fast, and he just got into a habit of doing it all so fast. And that doesn't lend itself to a passing camp style situation where you have no pressure and your accuracy will come with your form and your footwork. So these are things that he'll develop. I'm more interested in the mental side, that when he does do something that frustrates him, he takes a breath, and his next play, he does it right.
Trevor, how nervous would you be about the Titans' offensive line, given out that outside of Skoronski and maybe Petit Ferrer, there's like a lot of question marks about these guys and how little they'll actually have to practice and be able to compete against each other since they barely practice in pads anymore?
Yeah, I am far more worried about the offensive line's potential this year than I am even the pass catchers, to include the tight ends and the running backs for the Titans. You know, Skoronski, I think, is going to step right in and be a solid player. Will he be a Pro Bowl this year? I don't know. But I think he'll probably be their best offensive lineman this year, and then he'll get better from there. After that, you've got a couple of guys that could take another step to become a real steady player. I don't know that Petit Ferrer is going to do that necessarily. That all depends with him really on his strength. Coming out of Ohio State, the book on him was that he was very athletic, but that he was soft on the edges and had trouble dropping anchor against powerful players that put power moves on him. And so he's now had, you know, a year basically in the Titans weight room to develop that strength, and he's got more time before training camp starts. His progress will really be tethered to his ability to develop the strength and the technique to be able to drop anchor, especially in power moves on the edges. But he might be able to do it. He might be able to. You know, but that's why I say that everything's connected. And when you talk about DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver, if they overpay for him, depending on what else is happening with their ability to fit people under the cap this year, there's going to be a number of offensive linemen that will become available, certainly at the end of training camp, that will be better than the nine guys that people anticipate will be on this roster based on who's on it now. I mean, there'll be probably two or three or maybe four guys that'll be released that can come in here and do better than the guys they've got now. And so they want to make sure that they have cap space available, and they want to make sure they're focused on that, because it goes back to what we talked about originally a couple of minutes ago, Jared. If this team wants to compete for a Super Bowl, they're not going to do it by being better at throwing the ball than Kansas City or Cincinnati or Buffalo or those people they're competing with. So they've got to be better at pounding the ball. And so, you know, that means offensive line. Well, do you see an offensive line that looks like an elite road grading group here? Not even remotely close. And to me, the success of this offense will depend on the success of this line. And I think some key players, whether they're starters or role players, aren't on the roster right now that will be on the opening day.
Trevor Maddich is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. The SEC has made some scheduling changes. We'll get Trevor's reaction to that, and we'll do it next. Stillman & Company, Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Those are my guys. Hiller's Heat Wave Heroes are keeping you from getting burned this summer. If you know your home needs an air conditioning replacement, do not wait until it breaks down, because you do not want to be sweating in your home. This month, get a free UV light and free electronic air cleaner when you buy select new HVAC systems, or get a whole home water filtration for just $59 a month, or get a new whole home generator for just $139 a month. Call Hiller's Heat Wave Heroes to save the day. Visit happyhiller.com to book. Hiller's work is backed by the Happy You'll Be Your Services Free Guarantee, and I know this because I use Hiller. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Proud supporters of the Nashville Predators, the Vanderbilt Commodores right here, and the Tennessee Volunteers. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today. The SEC's got a new schedule. Apparently, they're going to go to 8 conference games. Everybody's got to play a Power 5 at a conference game. But the divisions are gone in 2024, and this is for 24 only, and then they'll reassess going to 25. Nick Saban was a proponent of the 8+1 as opposed to the 9, because the three games he was going to have to play were going to be Tennessee, LSU, and Auburn, and everybody else was probably going to get easier games. Instead, he'll only play Auburn every year. That LSU game, gone. Florida, Tennessee, every year, gone. Alabama, Tennessee, every year, gone. And so there's some up, there's some downs. Trevor Maddich is with us. I heard Caroline yelling and screaming about it this week or earlier today. Honestly, Trevor, I don't really care about this. Should I care? Is it a big deal? What do you make of it?
Well, it's a big deal for different reasons to different teams. You know, you just talked about the rivalries that are gone. If Alabama-Auburn is the permanent rivalry, then Georgia-Auburn would be gone as well, wouldn't it?
Oldest rivalry in the South.
Yeah, the oldest continuous rivalry in the Deep South. The thing is, losing those rivalries would be just a terrible thing. But see, at the same time, it was a terrible thing to lose the Texas-Oklahoma rivalry. You know, and that happened when the Big 12 went to divisions and the Oklahoma-Nebraska rivalry, when the Big 12 went to divisions and then the Nebraska went off to the Big 10. That used to be appointment watching. I mean, that was Alabama-Tennessee. That was Alabama-Auburn, Ohio State-Michigan. Was Oklahoma-Nebraska, right?
Yep.
And all of a sudden, it kind of went away, and it was really sad for a while. Then everybody forgot that it was an actual thing, right? And so, you know, I hate to see rivalries go away, but you've got to decide what's more important to you. Because on the flip side of that, Georgia went to Mississippi State this last year in football, and I think that was the first time they've been there since like 2010. And so by doing it this way, by having no divisions and lose some of the permanent every year rivalries, you're able to get every team play every other team, one home and one away, at least in a 4-year period. And so you get that benefit. So you have to decide which is more important. Maintain the rivalries, but don't go someplace for 6 years, or, you know, have that second benefit where you get to play everybody home and away every 4 years. And so, you know, but to me, the more important thing than that, because that's just a matter of personal preference, for the SEC is by only having 8 conference games instead of 9, they are allowing teams in the bottom half of the SEC to grow, to make bowl games, to have a better record, to have a winning record. Because if you get that ninth game, if there's 14 teams in the league right now, you know, it'll be 16 when the other two come in, but there's 14 now, that will mean a guaranteed 7 extra conference losses over the course of the conference. 7 conference teams will have an extra loss guaranteed because somebody's going to win those games. And the lesser of those teams could have scheduled a group of 5 team or even an FCS school so that they could have won to get them to 6 games, to get them to a bowl game, to get them some momentum. While the teams at the top that are trying to compete with other top conference teams for playoff seeding, they can schedule top non-conference teams. And so there's the best of all worlds when it comes to only having 8 conference games in the SEC, because you can get what you need, whether what you need is schedule yourself some wins or schedule yourself some quality opponents. You can do it either way with 8. With 9, you lose that bottom half.
Trevor Maddich is with us. Do you think it is inevitable that the SEC, because this is only a 1-year deal, do you think it is inevitable that the SEC is going to 9?
I think they're going to have to, because bringing in the extra 2 teams, bringing in Oklahoma and Texas. And so I think that'll force their hand. They'll have to go to 9. The question will be, how do they structure it? Because right now the 8 for 2024, as you mentioned, Jared, is 1 permanent rival and then no divisions, just a round robin 7 other opponents from what were the 2 divisions. If they go to 9, one of the ways they could do it is to go with what Nick Saban doesn't want, which is 3 permanent opponents, which for Alabama could well be, like you mentioned, LSU, Auburn, and Tennessee, which would be a whole lot more difficult than the 3 permanent opponents of pretty much anybody else in the conference, you would think. And so instead of doing it that way, 3 permanent and then 6 rotating, I would see them go with 9 games have one or maybe two, but probably one permanent opponent, and then rotate the rest of them like they will do in 24. I think they're going to see how it goes in 24. And the truth of it is, one thing they could well do is have an experimental 25 with, say, two permanent opponents and nine total games, and then decide if they like that. And if they do, keep it that way. If they don't, just drop it back to one.
Trevor Maddich is with us, presented by Houston Clinic, where the Pediatrician Swing Experience matters. Clark Lee, the Vandy coach, is going to stop by here as we are at Hawkins Field in about less than 10 minutes. And I am going to ask Clark how he feels about the eight versus the nine and kind of the changing of the league one way or another. How do you think, you know, Saban was against it because of the three teams that he thought he was going to have to play. What role do you think the coaches play in this, and what do you think the coaches want? Do you think they want eight games, or do you think they want nine league games?
You know, it depends on which coach. I mean, I'm sure the coaches would tell you in public that they want to play the best of the best as often as they can. But ultimately, you know, coaches keep their jobs when they go to bowl games and then get better from there. You know, they develop teams. I mean, a team like Vanderbilt needs that sixth win to have the two extra weeks of bowl practice and the bowl game to develop players. I mean, they need that in order to catch up and win games and then attract a higher level of recruit and all that stuff. You know, I will tell you this, though, that Clark Lee, I'm interested to hear what he's going to say, because he is one of the most respected coaches in college football. When he was the coordinator at Notre Dame, he didn't have to come to Vanderbilt to be the head coach because he might not have had another choice at some point at this level. He could have stayed at Notre Dame, where he was making a lot of money and widely respected. He could have waited another year or so to see if something else came open. He came to Vanderbilt because he wanted to come to Vanderbilt, because I think Vanderbilt sold themselves to Coach Lee even more than Coach Lee may have sold himself to Vanderbilt in the interview process. So I'm interested to hear about what he says about that whole process, because he's widely respected. He's here because he wants to be, because he could have waited and gone most places, and he wants to be here. And so it'll be interesting to see what he has to say about all that.
Five wins in year two for Coach Lee last year. I mean, so close to a bowl game. What are kind of your expectations? They got a quarterback now. You know, can Vandy really, you know, I like Clark. I think he's a good coach. I think it takes an exceptional coach to be able to win at Vanderbilt. Is the word on the street in college football that he's got that in him?
Yes, the word on the street is that he does. He'll need the support, because Vanderbilt, you know, Vanderbilt's support of the football program would need to evolve. And I think that he might not have taken the job had they not committed that to him. But part of their success, I think, needs to be seen with how competitive they are, because I expect them to be better this year than they were last year. But see, Tennessee is, again, going to be a very good team. South Carolina is on the rise. You know, Florida didn't have that good of a year last year, but they, I expect, to be on the rise. So, you know, wins are going to be a little more difficult to come by, even wins that they didn't get from last year. And so I would judge them not by how many wins they get, but, you know, the quality of their play and how that improves and how competitive they are.
Trevor Maddich, as always, he is the best, joining us on a Friday. We moved Trevor because of the Preds coaching news. He's the most adjustable, best guy in the business. Trevor, we appreciate your time, as always, and we appreciate you, bud.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program. We are live out here at Hawkins Field. We are actually, because of NCAA rules, we are actually behind Hawkins Field. So the left field scoreboard is right behind us. The Vandy boys will play at 7 o'clock tonight against Eastern Illinois, even though my Musketeers lost in the earlier game. Coach Clark Lee is set to join us coming up next, and we'll get into the SEC schedule and the future of the league and, you know, how do we feel about these rivalries and these divisions being gone. We'll get into that coming up next. Stillman & Company, live from Vandy, right here, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.